I take Element Electrolytes daily now, and it has helped everything from fatigue to headaches, even motion sickness on car rides. And you can get a free 8-pack with any and every order with our discount code. If you are regularly active in hot or humid conditions, or you follow a whole foods diet, you likely need to be proactive about replacing your electrolytes. In fact, in some of the research, it's found that during strenuous activity, you can lose between 400 and 1200 milligrams of sodium per hour. Electrolytes are minerals. They are like the spark plugs in the body because they are responsible for 20,000 reactions, including the creation of energy. Deficiencies can show up as dizziness, muscle cramps, tension, headaches, fatigue, sleep disturbances, and even some symptoms of HPA axis dysfunction. One of my favorite ways to replace minerals is with Element. I started supplementing with Element after workouts, and it made a huge difference almost immediately in my energy and the dizziness I used to experience on workout days. Element makes grab-and-go electrolyte replacement packs. There is no sugar, gluten fillers, or artificial ingredients. I have stacked it up against a lot of competitors, and it is one of the only ones that uses magnesium malate as the form of magnesium. Most others use magnesium citrate, which is a known laxative and has really poor absorbability. To use it, you just tear open a pack, pour, and stir it in water, and then sip. I've actually been mixing up half a packet for my kids when they are sick, outside playing on hot days, or when my daughter's at gymnastics practice. I always have some on hand because with sports and workouts and sicknesses going around and even gardening, it makes a huge difference. Right now, everyone, including new and current customers, can get a free 8-pack of Element with every order. Element comes in boxes of 30. There is free shipping on all orders, and now all orders will get a free 8-pack. To get Element, go to drinklmnt.com/wellfed and make sure to use the code WELLFED. That will get you the free sample pack. You can also buy 3 boxes, get one free. Again, that's drinklmnt.com/wellfed. You are now listening to Well-Fed Women, the show that's been radically changing the way women perceive health, fitness, and their bodies since 2015. I'm your host, Noelle Tarr. Submit your questions to wellfedwomen@gmail.com, and you can keep up with the show on Instagram @wellfedwomen. Welcome to the Well-Fed Women podcast. If you have been waiting for the episode about protein, this is it. This is episode number 448, and I'm so honored I get to interview Dr. Gabrielle Lyon for today's episode all about aging well and how, instead of being so focused on weight loss and losing fat, we should be focused on gaining muscle. And how do we do that? How do we gain and maintain muscle as we age? Loved this discussion. I love her ideas and her concepts, especially in her new book coming out. So we get to unpack all of that today. And you guys had some fantastic protein-related questions, so we do get into the nitty-gritty of that. Dr. Gabrielle Lyon is board certified in family medicine and completed a combined research and clinical fellowship in geriatrics and nutrition sciences at Washington University in St. Louis. She completed her undergraduate training in nutritional sciences at the University of Illinois. Dr. Lyon is a subject matter expert and educator in the practical application of protein types and levels for health, performance, aging, and disease prevention. She has continued to receive mentorship from Dr. Donald Lehman over the course of 2 decades to help bring protein metabolism and nutrition from the bench to the bedside. You can find more about her at drgabriellelyon.com, and her Instagram is @drgabriellelyon. Now let's get to the interview. Well, hello, Dr. Lyon. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me. Thank you. Yeah.
I'm excited to dive into everything. It's always exciting for me when I get to borrow someone's intellect for an hour and really get to the nitty-gritty of something so important. There is nothing more, as a 37-year-old woman, there's nothing more exciting to me right now than protein and building muscle. Mm-hmm. And while I know you saw all the questions, we're going to use our community questions to really drive our discussion first. I just want to set some groundwork with your book that's coming out and your sort of this idea that you've crafted this muscle-centric method. Why has muscle been such a missing piece in conventional health paradigms? And why do you consider it to be the real fountain of youth?
Muscle has been missing forever. You know, when we think about muscle, we think about looking good in the gym or athletic performance, but we right. often don't think about how it relates to our health and wellness. Of course, we think about the more you exercise, potentially the healthier you're going to be. But from the interface of actually medicine and thinking about what does longevity look like? What does optimal health and wellness look like? What does disease prevention look like? Muscle has been largely ignored. I'm not sure why, other than it's difficult to study. Medical treatment is typically either reactionary and it's not overarching in its preventative nature. It just is not. It's just a core fundamental paradigm of the way in which medicine operates. But it's a real missing link because it's really the only tissue we can do something about. It's under voluntary control.
Mm, I like that. You made a good point, which is a lot of people think protein is something you only focus on when you want to build muscle or get bulky. And because of decades of a fitness culture that has really marketed exercise as a thing you do to lose weight, not necessarily for longevity. It's always about getting rid of cellulite or working on your love handles or whatever. Most people only really consider protein within this like aesthetic goal situation. So what are some of the vital roles that protein plays beyond looking jacked, which is also fun? I mean, that's cool too.
Protein is a really interesting macronutrient because each protein amino acid, which is these amino acids make up protein, have various biological roles. It's not just about this global concept of protein as a macronutrient, but again, each of the 20 different amino acids are processed differently. They each have unique biological roles. For example, for your listener, we talk about looking jacked, muscle health. That is primarily driven by the amino acid called leucine. There are other amino acids like threonine for the help of mucin production in the gut. There's arginine for vasodilation, which can affect blood pressure. So if someone potentially has low arginine in their diet, they may have challenges with blood pressure. There are other amino acids that are required as precursors for neurotransmitters. You name it, it's not just about this macronutrient protein. The issue becomes we don't look at those individual amino acids. And rightly so, it's very difficult. You don't go and look at the back of, say, I mean, this is a ketone pack, so it doesn't have amino acids, but you don't typically go back and look at an ingredient list and say, oh, well, this is the amount of valine in here, or this is the amount of methionine. Because again, we've always thought about protein as this macronutrient in and of itself, not the complexity of what it really does in the body. I mentioned what those individual amino acids do, but it also does other things. The body is constantly going through protein turnover, the rebuild and repair. You and I were talking about bone density prior. What do you think bone is made of? Bone is made of protein. Mm-hmm. There's all these different requirements that protein have and has in the body. And it's an essential macronutrient. You cannot make it all. You do need these essential amino acids.
So for women in their 20s and 30s, the youngins,
the way, you were pretty young when you started this podcast. So interesting. 8 years later.
Yeah. Now it's funny. I don't know. It's funny now that I'm like the 20-year-old. What can women who are in their 20s and maybe, you know, creeping in, they've turned 30, hey, 30, you're 30, whatever. How can they set themselves up for success when it comes to bone density and muscle mass and setting themselves up for success, you know, aging? And I know it's hard because we're not really thinking about aging at that time.
But if you could, this is the place and the time in which you would excel. If you thought and had foresight in your 20s, you're going to be smooth sailing. This is the time, your optimal time to put down skeletal muscle. Hormones are high. You probably don't have a ton of responsibility. You can train, you can plan your diet, and you can build skeletal muscle mass reserve. You can build and maintain healthy skeletal muscle. Really, the time to prioritize this. Well, first of all, again, I know that some of your viewers or listeners are in their 40s and 50s. It's never too late. But the earlier you start, the better your chances of being able to maintain the skeletal muscle. And again, skeletal muscle is everything. It is your glucose sink. When we think about how do we dispose of the carbohydrates that we're eating, it's the majority of that is skeletal muscle. They're, you know, just insulin mediated disposal of glucose, but also exercise. So you've got the insulin effect of on skeletal muscle, but also exercising skeletal muscle can use glucose without insulin. So this is amazing. Skeletal muscle is your amino acid reserve. If you get sick, your body utilizes these amino acids. It is, again, it's an organ system. When you contract skeletal muscle through exercise, it secretes myokines that travel throughout the body and really help regulate the inflammatory responses. And what about for women that are thinking about fertility? PCOS. 75% of people with PCOS have insulin resistance. Skeletal muscle makes up the largest portion, the largest mass of our body, and also ultimately the largest site for potentially insulin resistance.
So where is the shift? Like at what point do we start? At what point does it get harder to build muscle and we get into this like muscle loss phase of life?
I really appreciate that question because people often think about aging as this downward linear progression, but it's not. Basically, when you have some kind of catastrophic event, and you can define that however you want, maybe it's the flu and you're on bed rest or in bed for 10 days. It's these kinds of things that happen, or you get sick or you bust your Achilles heel. It's actually not this linear progression. It's periods of significant input that create an environment where you don't recover the way that you did when you were younger.
Yes.
And it is this slow cascade of events with a decrease in hormonal status, with a decrease in effortful training in the gym, over time, low levels of inflammation. It becomes somewhat of an uphill battle, but it doesn't have to be if you start training in your 20s and you continue throughout this. It allows you to leverage skeletal muscle to buffer the interface of the world.
Oh, I love that. Buffering the interface. Because I kind of think about it as like creating space. Like we all want that space. That's resilience, essentially, right? It's the space to have the Achilles tendon rupture or to have your back thrown out, or speaking from experience, right, or to have the flu, and or even to have an exposure to a gut pathogen and exactly. Then be able to come back down, but never go below baseline, right? We can take it because we have the space.
Right.
We've built the buffer.
Right. That's right.
Which is another book name, Building the Buffer. We built the buffer so that then we can come back down to baseline, not feel our best, but then get back to being resilient. So I love that. Okay, so let's talk to our women in our 40s and 50s. What can women do in their 40s and beyond? You said nobody's ever too far gone.
No, we see changes in skeletal muscle even in their 40s and 50s for the positive or, you know, benefits.
Yeah. And I mean, so it's obviously hard. Is it harder to build muscle at that age, or is it just that we lose muscle faster?
It's harder to build muscle when you have life get in the way. Is it inherently harder to build muscle? I would say that it's not. I say this very cautiously because let's say a woman has a very well-designed program and we can correct whatever kind of hormonal deficiencies that she has. We can get her sleeping well. We can reduce her stress. We can really dial in her diet. I don't think it's as more difficult. At that time, again, are there changes that happen in skeletal muscle? There are. Skeletal muscle becomes more insulin resistant. If you've struggled with weight over time, can there become fat around and in the skeletal muscle? Yes. But again, this is treatable and reversible.
And how do we treat it and reverse it?
Yeah, you start training. You start creating flex within that skeletal muscle.
Got it.
You really start being able to use those substrates. It's this idea of, have you ever, I don't know, do you have kids?
I do. I have two.
You have two little kids. Okay. You know, when they have the kiddie pool and if you leave that kiddie pool all stagnant, mold can grow and it just gets gross.
Yes.
It's gross. And then you're so disappointed and the kids, you know, weekend is ruined. I know because I have to, after this interview, go empty out the very large inflatable kiddie pool. Think about muscle the same way. If you let it sit, it becomes stagnant and things begin to accumulate there that we don't want. exercise allows us to empty out that kiddie pool.
And
when you continuously empty out the kiddie pool, refill it back up with muscle glycogen, then you have this flux that happens and ultimately healthy skeletal muscle. Specifically, what does that look like? It looks like training. And there's multiple ways to create an input, right? In my book, I outline, you know, we have all kinds of exercise protocols from beginner to intermediate, and they can go on my website, and we have advanced protocols. We have video libraries. But the idea is doing some kind of resistance training. There's multiple ways to skin that cat to really stimulate the muscle to get stronger and again, create that flux. In addition to adding in some kind of exercise, some kind of endurance type cardiovascular exercise, this could be zone two cardio. This could be high intensity interval training. I also have two little kids. I typically don't do long endurance training at all. What I'll do is I'll do high intensity interval training. Mm-hmm. I'll do it on the bike. I'll do intervals, 1 minute intervals, and I'll do that for 10 times. My total workout is 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So how many days a week are you working out, and how do you split your workouts? Are you doing mostly lifting? I mean, how often are you doing high intensity interval training?
Once a week.
Okay.
And for the women, it's totally up to the person. If you are a perimenopausal woman or postmenopausal woman who's never trained, you're actually going to get the biggest benefit because you're technically untrained. Mm-hmm. You will be able to put on muscle likely faster than someone who has been training their whole life because the muscle is primed. You're going to then feed it high quality dietary protein, and it's just going to be positive all around. So that is one strategy to consider. When it comes to resistance training, could you train 1 or 2 days a week? Totally. But again, it is how much volume it would take to hit each muscle group twice. Is it really about hitting each muscle group twice? No, what it is doing enough work to create an adaptation and figuring out what is your goal. Is your goal to maintain? You know, for me, I could probably work out once a week and maintain my muscle, but my goal is to improve it and grow muscle. For me, I train 3 to 4, sometimes 5 days a week, very targeted training. I hit each muscle group twice a week, sometimes 3, depending on what I'm doing.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Last question before we get into some community questions. Can you actually build muscle just by increasing your protein intake, or do you have to expose your muscles to the load?
You can build muscle if you are, it's kind of like muscle deficient, or if you are protein deficient. If you've been eating a very low protein diet, would you potentially put on some skeletal muscle by increasing dietary protein? You would. For someone who is well-trained, if they just increase their dietary protein, would they put on muscle? Unlikely.
Got it.
And I will say the majority of women are not eating enough protein. According to the NHANES data, which is the largest data set that we have, women are eating between 60 to 70 grams of protein a day. Mm. That's not enough.
I have been looking for a hair growth serum for the better part of 5 years now, and I have finally found one, and I convinced them to give you 20% off. Ever since I had 2 babies back to back, my hair just hasn't been the same. I dealt with what seemed like unusually large amounts of hair loss in the shower for the better part of 2 years postpartum. And ever since then, my hair has been much thinner. I also noticed it occasionally during more stressful times. And it just seems like now I'm much more prone to it when life gets crazy. I have been on the search for a clean, peptide-rich hair serum for quite some time. Nothing fit the bill for me. I even thought about making my own, but then I found Divi, which is a scalp serum that improves the appearance of breakage, nourishes hair follicles, and removes product and oil buildup. It has copper tripeptide 1, caffeine, tea tree oil, amino acids, and hyaluronic acid. It has all of the science-backed ingredients I want and none of the unsafe ingredients I don't. Hair loss actually affects over 80 million Americans, and using A hair serum like Divi is great for people who have hair shedding because you're postpartum or you're going through menopause or you're under stress, but it's also a great preventative treatment because it helps remove product buildup and oil, heals dry scalp, and helps to nourish the scalp and hair. And let me tell you, Divi is so lightweight, you would not even know you have it on your scalp. I put the little drops on at night before I go to bed and I wake up, and it's like nothing happened. It's magic. Because some serums that I tried made my hair look oily. This does not at all. Take back control of your hair and scalp health and do it with clean, science-backed ingredients with a special offer for you all in the Well-Fed Women community. Go to DiviOfficial.com/WellFed or enter WellFed at checkout for 20% off your first order. That's Divi, D-I-V-I, official.com/WellFed for 20% off your first order.
Okay, well, let's talk about that because that's the next question from our community. And I cannot tell you, I feel like this is like such a controversial topic because anytime I post anything about protein, everybody's like, well, people are really, it's, you know, what people think people need in terms of protein is inflated. And, you know, most people are getting enough protein. So I don't, you know. So this question is from Real Life Whole Food. She says, how much protein do women need each day?
Well, let's start with the RDA. The RDA is 0.8 grams per kg. That's the minimum requirement to prevent deficiencies. That's the minimum. Who do you? So if you wanted to just prevent deficiencies and be at the minimum, that would be 0.8 grams per kg. If you want to be more optimal, the data would support closer to double that, 1.6 grams per kg. And that would be considered more in an optimal range. I recommend 1 gram per pound ideal body weight because there's no problem increasing protein to that amount. And for women, it will help correct body composition when calories are controlled. Because protein in and of itself, if you have a robust amount in a discrete meal, what does that mean? That means your breakfast meal has 40 to 50 grams of protein. You trigger this process in your muscle. And it makes the utilization and disposal of nitrogen, which is part of what protein is, expensive. You actually utilize it and burn calories while ingesting protein and disposing of it and all the other pathways required. That's fascinating versus carbohydrates are less. They have a lower thermic effect of feeding and same with fat. Just by increasing dietary protein, you will increase some of that metabolic drive.
Mm-hmm. Why? I mean, I don't think people know that RDA is like the minimum.
I know. Isn't that hilarious? They don't.
Yeah.
It's not common knowledge. Let's put it into context, right? So the context would be when you get sick or when your kids get sick, do you give them the minimum amount of vitamin C to prevent scurvy?
Right.
No. You don't. Why do we not think about dietary protein that way?
Yeah.
It's a reframing and it's conceptually, how are we thinking about this relationship that we have with food? Food is the longest relationship we'll ever have. It's longer than the relationship you have with your children. It's longer the relationship that you have with a family member. It is the longest and most consistent relationship you will ever have.
Mm. Yeah. So confusing though. It's complicated. It's a complicated relationship.
That's really funny. Yeah, it is complicated, but should it be? It shouldn't be.
Yeah, I know.
There are core fundamental principles that people can deploy and see if they work for themselves, rooted in science to be able to navigate that relationship.
Nicole Burnett says, what's the ideal ratio of protein for women that weight train? So a lot of us listening our weight training, we are doing the thing, we're doing the strength training, even if it is just once or twice a week. But I have to say, most women who are probably my age or in their 40s are not just looking to maintain, they want to gain. So if we're looking to gain muscle mass, are we doing more than 1 gram per pound ideal body weight?
No, but you are increasing your calories by 10 to 20%. You do need to increase your calories if you want to put on muscle. You have to eat. This would not be the time to be in a calorie deficit. Optimizing for dietary protein is key. 1 gram per pound ideal body weight will totally do that. And of course, increasing your total calorie intake, 10 to 20%.
By the way,
slowly, so that way you don't put on body fat.
Yes. Yeah. By the way, everybody, I am writing, I'm taking notes because we're probably going to be, so you don't have to be like holding the math in your head. I'll write it down and put it in the show notes. This is a great follow-up question to that. Meld8690 says, if you're trying to build muscle and lose fat, how do protein needs vary from maintaining to building? So this is kind of the complicated fitness thing, right? We want to build lean muscle, but we also don't want to gain mass.
Picking one goal, it would be the first thing that I would say. You are going to lose fat as you are building muscle if you do it right. And that's why increasing calorie slowly would be something that I recommend. It doesn't have to be a fast process. The key is, if you want to lose fat, why not focus on that while maintaining skeletal muscle versus building? Would it be the best strategy to be in a calorie deficit? But if your goal is to build muscle, it's kind of a conflicting goal. But it doesn't mean that you can't do it. We see it. We see people lose, some of the earlier studies that I worked on, we saw individuals lose body fat and put on muscle in a calorie controlled environment. But I think it becomes complicated. I think it becomes complicated for just someone who is trying to do this on their own.
Yeah. And I think too, like, I think picking a goal is such just simple advice, but it is what most people need to hear. Because yeah. I think we've been fed that we can have it all and it can be fast. I mean, that's the fitness industry. It's always like 12 weeks.
There's no hack for hard work, my friend.
Right, right. Okay, this one's from Sarah. She says, should our macros change once we hit 35? Can we talk about macros and calories and all things nutrition for women 35 plus? I'd also love to hear about her favorite brands of protein powders and supplements and why. And girl, I got so many questions about protein powders. So
really?
I didn't put them all on here, but yeah, talk to me about protein needs, meeting those protein requirements, and then like powders and supplements. Yeah.
Let's talk about first, and I address all this stuff in the book. I actually do it through, do you have a copy of the book?
Yes, I do. It's right here.
You do? Oh my gosh. Okay. So yeah. You saw that I do 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. Because I was like, gosh, this girl is just, these are genius questions. it's not that the food has to change. It really is based on your activity. It's based on what is your activity? Again, what is your hormonal status? But ultimately, it really is activity. It doesn't have to change. It doesn't have to change based on age. I think part of the issue is we don't have a lot of super fit, healthy, older individuals because right. it has not been what we have focused on. Think about it. Think about the health and wellness space. The health and wellness space it's like a younger group.
Yeah.
But we're leaving everybody out of the super young crowd and the more mature crowd. And it's a disservice to people. It truly is a disservice. And ultimately we see that even in science, we don't have tons of data on extremely active individuals. Because how do we even define that? You define activity with metabolic equivalence, but you have elite individuals who are training these elite older cyclists, but what about elite older weightlifters? How many of those people exist? Part of the reason that I don't think it exists is it's just the concept of how we approach aging as a culture. So anyway, you don't have to reduce your calories just because you turn 35. You do have to increase your training volume. You do have to be improving. And in terms of protein powders, there's tons of great protein powders. I use First Form. They're, Thorne makes a great one, just a clean protein powder. So if you are just looking for protein powder versus are you looking for something that has phytonutrients in it and other things, but just from a protein powder perspective. And then there's actually two other supplements that three other supplements for women I really recommend. Do you want to hear what they are?
I do. I think that I have questions coming about them, but yeah.
Creatine monohydrate between 3 and 5 grams. I recommend Urolithin A, and the brand I use is called MitoPure, 500 milligrams once or twice a day. Phenomenal, helps with mitochondria health. And then an omega-3 fatty acid, a fish oil. This is a great baseline formula for muscle health for women, regardless of their age.
I think it's really interesting because I've been thinking about this recently. Like, you see how many on Instagram, like reels pop up of, and when like something pops up of some, like a 70-year-old or a 75-year-old lifting, like I think there's a woman named Joan. We all follow her.
Incredible. Yeah.
Incredible, right? And I think about how cool it is to see these active older adults who are lifting, who have changed their lives, lifting. And then I think, wow, in like 30 or 40 years, is that just going to be what Instagram is? It's like all of us. Old,
oh my gosh, I never training. Thought about it.
Yeah, it's going to be all of us still training. And we're the old people now who lift. And so I think it's really cool that we get to redefine aging as millennials, you know, and Gen Xers. I think it's cool that, okay, a lot of us got started lifting in our 20s, and the boomers and our generations before us, our grandparents, they were not doing that. They were doing a lot of work. They were doing, you know, maybe they're on the farm. My grandparents owned a farm, but they were not intentionally doing the strength and the lifting, and they didn't have the science like we do. They didn't have, you know, they don't know what high intensity interval training is. And so it's going to be really cool for us as 30, 40 somethings to kind of redefine that, to redefine what it means to be 70 and have, you know, functional independence. So
I think that's a great idea. And that's going to be hilarious. Are we going to be the ones on the Instagram lifting weights at 70? Gosh, probably.
It's a goal. I plan on it. Hopefully. I could be so lucky, right? Okay. So let's talk about, so this is a good one. Speaking of, Renissa Francis says, how much protein a day for a 59-year-old woman? And I got this a lot, Dr. Lyon, like a lot of 50-year-olds or 60-something saying, well, how much protein do I need? Because I think the idea is, well, my need decreases as I age. So I
know it increases. Protein, right. There's the ProAge study. There's a lot of studies that show protein needs increase. Because why do we have protein needs increase? Because we have to keep up with protein turnover. That means everything is changing and rebuilding and repairing over time, right? And when we get older in our 50s, potentially that capacity becomes a little bit more sluggish. And again, I wish that that wasn't the case. There is this idea that also there's an increase in reactive oxygen species, that there's a little bit more inflammation, even low-grade inflammation. So you actually need more dietary protein as you age.
So now, does
that is the macronutrient, my friend. Noelle, that's the macronutrient that people need to focus on. And I love what you said about it being very controversial. This is the most important thing that people need to understand. Dietary protein, I've been doing this for 20 years. It was never controversial before. It was never controversial till the rise of social media.
Hmm.
There was Diet for a New Planet that came out. I think that came out in the 70s. And that was kind of the first vegetarian style vegan diet that really, or book that really impacted the public. But for the most part, you know, I'm a geriatrician by training, which means I have been trained in individuals over the age of 65. It's never been controversial. These are new things that we are hearing because of the rise of social media. So you need more protein as you age because you must keep up with protein turnover. What happens when you don't have enough protein and enough training? Look at your grandparents. Look at the 50-year-old's parents. You become sarcopenic. Muscle becomes smaller, the fiber types change, the body changes. And if you do not keep up with that changing body and you do not intervene and deploy strategies, then you will age like that, but you do not have to. And the way everybody at this call is going to, or everyone who is listening or watching, you're going to all start by increasing dietary protein. And if, you know, I lay out, there's never been a book written like this. I lay out pathways for exactly what you need to do, how to eliminate this distraction and confusion. Like Noelle said, there's all this crazy information out there. It doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, I do love how like in your book, you have a lot of stuff about like different protocols, but then different health optimization tracks. Like here's your protein intake, like exactly the amount of protein that you want to take based on where you're at and your goals and all the things. So I believe it because most books, right, or most protocols are really focused on one size fits all because that's what sells. It's so hard. It's so hard to sell customization. It's so hard to sell a book publisher on customization, right? Like nobody wants it, but it's what everybody needs. And it's the only way that it works. So, yeah. Okay, let's get to the supplement questions. So this is from T. Dietz. Yeah, she says, do you take creatine and amino acids every day or just on the days that you work out?
I don't take, first of all, creatine is lower in women. And that could be just endogenously, it's lower in women. And could that be because women have less muscle mass? Creatine is stored in muscle. I personally don't take creatine right now because my diet is very high in lean red meats. So I eat a ton of lean red meats. And because of that, that's the primary source of creatine. I don't supplement with additional creatine, but I also, this is what I do for a living. I am highly focused on it. If that is not you and you are eating leaner sources of protein or lighter sources, maybe chicken or fish, then you should definitely supplement with creatine. Creatine is just not for power, performance, and energy. It also is for cognition, for brain health and cognition. That is very a fascinating addition to what we think when we think about creatine. I do also not utilize branched chain amino acids. The reason I don't use branched chain amino acids is because I eat a diet with high quality protein. And high quality proteins are defined as beef, chicken, anything that is gravity bearing, or even fish is also considered a high quality protein, eggs and whey. Lower end quality of protein is based purely on the amino acid profile. That's it. It is not an emotional conversation. None of those things, right? Like it's either right. High quality or low quality based on the amino acid profile of these foods. Now, if you were to take branched chain amino acids, how would you do it? I suggest that if you struggle to meet your total protein intake, branched chain amino acids on a lower protein meal, like a 3-ounce serving of fish would be the way to do it. There's some evidence. Some people feel better when they're taking intra-workout branched chain amino acids too. So that's another way to do it.
That brings up something for me, which is this idea of like meal timing. So I've heard that if you go, I don't know what the time is, like 3 or 4 hours without intaking protein, your body kind of shifts into this catabolic state and you're using your protein. So one gram per pound of ideal body weight of protein is a lot for people. A lot of people are like, how in the world do I do that? So are you eating smaller, frequent meals that are high in protein? Are you eating a lot in one sitting?
It all depends. It all depends on what your ultimate goal is. I have created different pathways. For example, if you like where your body composition is right now and you are just thinking about longevity, then really you only need 2 larger meals and a smaller one in the middle. If you are looking to build muscle, then I recommend having 4 discrete meals. If you are looking to lose weight, I recommend a 3-meal-a-day strategy with an even distribution.
Okay.
So pick your path and you just make it easy. And the reason that it's so easy is I've been doing this for so long. So you see what works.
Yeah.
This is what's so great is over time, you see so many people, you know how to create a path that isn't complicated.
Yeah.
Again, complication is distraction. When things are complicated, it's distracting.
I agree.
And totally unnecessary.
Okay, this is from Amanda. She says, should collagen intake be counted towards daily protein intake?
No. No, it's completely devoid in tryptophan and actually has a protein score of 0. Did you know that?
No, really?
It has a protein score of 0, yeah. So there's Diaz and then there's PDCAS. There's all these different ways of scoring protein. They're coming out with a new EAA9, but the collagen protein score is 0. Yeah. It's still great for other things like hair, skin and nails, like gut health, all the other things.
Yeah. And I think that I get so many questions about this, and I'm sure you do too, is because the collagen supplementation world has exploded, you know, in the last decade. That's what everybody's, you know, trying to supplement with. And they, you know, whatever, it's the grass-fed, you know, Vital Proteins, you know, they kind of came on the scene and changed everything. And now it's everywhere. So,
and I think it's actually great.
Yeah.
If you have unexplained or even occasional digestive issues like myself, or you just want to support your body in the absorption of nutrients, digestive enzymes are your first defense. And I have a 20% off coupon code for you, which I'm very excited about. Even though I eat nutrient-dense foods and I don't eat foods I'm reactive to, I still have random digestive issues occasionally, especially when stressed, traveling, or eating out. I ended up doing some research on different enzymes that help digest protein, lactose, and even carbohydrates, and wanted something that had hydrochloric acid, since stomach acid is often suppressed when we're stressed. I found all of that in something called Digestive Complex. It has a blend of 10 different digestive enzymes, including lactase, to help with dairy digestion, and protease for protein digestion, and a blend of herbs like licorice and marshmallow root, which are calming for the stomach. When I tell you this has completely changed my digestion, I am not exaggerating. I take them almost daily now, specifically with cheese, since I'm trying to up my protein intake, and I have zero issues with dairy. And about 1 to 2 times a week, I take them at night, just after dinner, if my stomach is a little sour or off, and every single time, it resolves it. I now have a bottle in my purse. It goes everywhere with me. I travel with them and always take them, especially when I'm eating out at restaurants. Digestive Complex is a synergistic formula that provides support for healthy digestion and relief from occasional discomfort, like gas, bloating, and indigestion. I think just about everyone should have a bottle on hand to proactively help your body digest food, especially if you're dealing with a chronic condition or you're under stress. And for a limited time, you can get 20% off Digestive Complex. Just go to mdlogichealth.com/digestive and use coupon code WELLFED20 for 20% off. Again, that's MD Logic Health. So mdlogichealth.com/digestive and use coupon code WELLFED20 for 20% off. And you always get free shipping on orders of $50 or more.
Let's look at, okay, this is a good question. This is from Amantheo. She says, how do I get enough protein each day if a higher protein intake, like 1 gram per pound of body weight, messes up my digestion?
You got to fix your digestion. Why? Why is this happening? You have to fix it. You know, you should be able to eat without it messing up digestion. So the question is, you know, and we see that a lot. So if someone has a bout of food poisoning, and oftentimes, whether it's E. coli, Campylobacter, but they typically will get small intestinal bacteria overgrowth. And again, I don't know what this person is dealing with, but small intestinal bacteria overgrowth causes the body to create antiviculin, which is an antibody that attacks the nerves. This viculin, which is kind of the end point of the motor neuron, helps with peristalsis in the gut. And it can actually damage those nerves. So people become constipated or bloated. And so those are the things that you have to look at addressing, because you should be able to digest and absorb the food that you're eating.
And if somebody, because, you know, this is a popular thing, and I was a vegetarian for a while in my teens. If somebody has not been eating animal protein and then they start eating it again and then they're like, oh, my body can't even digest it. Like, how do they go about increasing their intake so that they have their body can digest the food again?
Wonderful question. Introduce it slowly over 2 weeks or so. There has to be this enzymatic process that picks back up. And then I would recommend they speak to their physician, but adding in a little betaine HCL could be helpful.
This is from Pager731. She says, does consuming protein with carb or with fat make a difference for building lean muscle?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. If you're talking about glycogen repletion, probably a better strategy to combine both at the same time, but not necessary. It's really in a 24-hour period. These are great questions. How big is your community?
pretty big. But you know what?
It must be. You've been doing it for so long.
I tell people, though, that I mean, I always prep people before they come on. I say, these people are smart. This community gets it. You know, they're in it and they've been thinking hard. And I think that it's so overwhelming because we're told so many different things now. And I love the access to information. I love it. I love that I get to follow people like you. And I love that people get to follow me. You know, it's cool. We get to connect with our communities. But it is so information overload that people don't know what to think anymore. They don't know what to believe. Everybody has a different opinion. And most of the time, well, I won't say most. A large majority of people don't have a background. It's just not scientifically backed, you know, what they're saying. They're saying it because somebody else said it. You know, so they're quoting other people's opinions. So it's difficult. It's hard to decipher.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. This one's from Isabella, and you might have mentioned this a little bit, but she says, does your body's ability to absorb protein decrease as you age? If so, no. How do you make this better?
No, it doesn't. But what does happen is there are changes in digestion. It's not the protein per se, but sometimes stomach acid decreases.
And that's betaine HDL, which you mentioned before.
Yeah.
Okay. So Krista Lear says, I'm struggling with estrogen dominance. Mm. How do I get enough protein without relying too much on animal protein?
What does estrogen dominance have to do with animal protein? Nothing. Estrogen dominance, you treat, perhaps you'll add in some progesterone, micronized progesterone, but estrogen dominance, typically fat cells make estrogen. One of the best ways to manage that would be to improve body composition. One of the best ways to improve body composition is to optimize for dietary protein.
Okay. This is a good one. This is another one that we got a lot of. So this is from T.S. Molly. She says, what is the best thing to eat before weight training and then after?
Something that is not going to affect your digestion. You don't necessarily need to eat before you train, because you're going to be stimulating skeletal muscle. Post-training, if you've worked hard enough, I do think that there's benefit to protein and potentially glycogen repletion like carbohydrates, but you don't have to do it right after you work out. It really is in a 24-hour period.
And that's really interesting, because I remember when the science on this was kind of changing, when the bro science was all like, you need to eat within 5 minutes or like 30 minutes, right? And then it was like, oh, we actually have protein stored on our body. Like we have, if you've eaten good in the last 24 hours, you actually have the things you need to properly replenish muscle glycogen storage and, you know, initiate that protein synthesis, which I thought was really interesting. But if somebody, because I feel like sometimes post-workout meals help people meet their protein requirements, right? And that's really the beauty of it. Okay. So this is from Janae. She says, do macro and nutrient requirements change with your cycle? So do our needs actually change?
I struggle with this one because I think there's variation in opinion and literature. My best recommendation is to be consistent. My best recommendation is to be consistent. I am not sure that I believe that energy changes are extremely significantly different. I don't know that answer. I'm just not convinced yet.
Yeah. And especially if you're thinking about it, I like this idea of protein within a 24-hour period. Like that's what makes the difference. I 100% agree with you. The idea that your protein need would change.
No, so your protein needs don't change. If anything, that they would go up in certain, you know, if you're sick, if you're pregnant, if you want to build muscle, if any of the other things, but I would never reduce dietary protein.
Okay, I love this question because this is kind of like, well, how do I know? This is from M. Rich. She says, how do I know if I'm actually succeeding in building lean muscle? Like, am I just looking for strong arms?
You are going to do a DEXA or an in-body. It's not perfect, but it's good enough.
A DEXA or an, you said
in-body, bod pod. It's not the best, but it's better.
And that's for people if they really just want to see, am I actually changing my overall skeletal muscle mass?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. This is of course, an important one. This is from Lollipop Shoe. She says, is it true that too much protein is bad for the kidneys? How much is too much?
There's no evidence of anything being too much. quite frankly. Isn't that fascinating? And there's been multiple meta-analyses that have come out saying that actually dietary protein can improve glomerular filtration rate, improve kidney function if you have healthy kidneys.
So there's no ceiling. I mean, if somebody has a kidney disease, should they be more thoughtful about it?
Probably.
Right.
But we haven't seen a ceiling yet. We haven't seen a ceiling yet. That's wild. We've seen a ceiling on fat, on carbohydrates. We have not seen a ceiling on protein.
All right, let's move into some workout questions. This is from Christine. She says, I'm 44 and exercise. I do a combo of cardio and strength 4 to 5 days a week and have a reasonable diet. Until recently, that's worked to keep my weight where I'm comfortable. This past year, however, I've put on weight and I just don't feel like what I've done in the past works to keep it off. I know everyone is different, but any tips from an exercise or diet perspective as I get older to keep weight in check? And I'm sure you hear this question all the time.
Dietary protein. Optimize for dietary protein. You have to track your calories. You have to see what you're doing. You optimize for dietary protein, and then adding in a day of high intensity interval training would be great. Some kind of sprint interval training, some kind of training where you're really pushing the needle, because what you're doing isn't working. And is it that you're just increasing calories, or are you not training as hard? But you definitely need to get diet in check, because that's something everybody does. 100% of people eat.
Okay, this is from Sarah. She says, what would a good weekly workout routine look like? How much walking should we prioritize over cardio? So this is another big shift, right? In our 20s, we were cardio queens. And then we were like, oh, maybe we should start lifting and doing some sprint efforts. So what does a good week look like, especially for the 35 plus crowd?
You should be doing non-exercise activity daily. You should be doing that, and not, that's just living activity. That is not additional exercise. Therefore, what I recommend is, again, designing a program where you can hit each body part twice a week, make it easy on yourself. Do not think about walking as exercise. Think of this as just part of life, because we are very physically active creatures. This is a part of life execution that you need to do. I do believe you should do something that is pretty hard once a week. That should be either a sprint interval where it's a maximum effort, or some kind of high intensity interval training. And focus on lifting heavier weights. Yes, the evidence will suggest that you could get away with lighter weights, more volume, more repetition. However, that takes a lot of time. It also doesn't kind of dial in your mental capacity.
This is from Sophia. She says, I'm interested in lifting heavy, and I know there are a lot of options for exercises, but I would like to increase my weight in my back squat. I feel like my legs and glutes can handle more weight, but my core and pelvis is compromised in end range. Any advice? She says she lifts heavy in non-compromised ranges, lighter in full range and more reps. I'm 48. I've been lifting for about a year and a half with decent muscle gain, but I'd like to get stronger.
That would be, you should talk to a trainer about that, right? Design a program. I couldn't give you an answer, but I will say that there's probably other modalities, whether it's blood flow restriction. Again, I am not a training expert. I am an expert in medicine and muscle health. As it relates to training, there are other modalities, potentially, again, blood flow restriction. Potentially, there's something called the catalyst suit, which is super cool. And this is an EMS type stimulation suit that potentially would be able to help you leverage other muscle groups. But again, working with a trainer or potentially a physical therapist.
I have a question about what would you start doing to build lean muscle at 7 months postpartum? Because can you talk to me a little bit about the role of protein in both pregnancy and then how important it is postpartum and how that changes?
Yeah, it's everything. So I trained through both of my pregnancies. Pregnancy is an insulin resistant state because you're growing something. Pregnancy is an insulin resistant state. There are many people that are at risk for gestational diabetes. And when we think about preventing gestational diabetes, yes, there's potentially a genetic component and a nutritional component, but this is where leveraging skeletal muscle is really important. So again, for me, I did weights throughout my entire pregnancy, and I started training 6 weeks postpartum. It is the key. It's the key.
And should we, so I know there's a lot of recommendations for exactly the amount of protein that you should be eating in pregnancy? Are we still following the 1 pound per, 1 gram per pound of ideal body weight? Or how
it's
does that
really fit? Hard when you're pregnant? It's really tough. I recommend the minimum is 100 grams of protein. Yeah. And that's easily supported. But they should shoot for around 100. You could shoot for more. But again, I was super nauseous and sick. I think a lot of women struggle.
Yeah. So you kind of have to make that up postpartum almost. Mm-hmm. Make up your lack of. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Last question is from Jen. And you've talked a little bit about this, but I'd be interested to hear you talk a little bit deeper. She says, what are my sequencing of workouts for optimal muscle building? Do I start with upper, then lower, then rest, then do a full body day? Or am I doing multiple full body days?
What you're looking for is an adaptation. This is where getting with a great trainer is amazing. I actually have training protocols in the book. There's multiple ways to skin a cat, whether you're going to do compound movements first. Again, it all depends on where you are. And could you train upper body and lower body? Totally. Could you do more athletic movements or more compound movements or kettlebell swings where you're training them both at the same time? Totally. Again, you have a detailed way in which you eat. You have a detailed way in which you do your taxes. You should have a detailed way in which you have your fitness. Mm. And this is where really working with an expert is really important.
I love that. If you outsource your taxes, it's okay to outsource your fitness too and get some advice.
If you are not a fitness expert, you should not be trying to make your own plan.
Yeah.
It's 100% like trying to be your own doctor. It's just as important.
All right. So Dr. Lyon, tell me, I know we've talked through a lot about what's in your book, but I'm actually just measured out what the amount of the actual plan, like the applicable plan. And it's almost half the book, which is like, here are the recipes, here are the workouts, here's the things mm-hmm. so that people actually have action items, actionable tips. It's not just a bunch of here's what I do and here's what you should do. It's like, hey, let's take action. Like part three is the most of the book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Part three is most of the book. Talk to me about just tell me a little bit about the book and why you wrote it.
Well, number one, this book is dedicated to my mentor of 20 years, Dr. Donald Lehman, who is a world-leading expert in protein metabolism. This takes decades of evidence-based information and intellectual integrity, and it brings it to the masses. So it goes from bench to bedside with high intellectual integrity. My hope is that it creates an environment of people understanding what they have to gain, not what they have to lose. This book is for anybody and everybody who has struggled and doesn't know what they need to do and is frustrated. This will change the way that they feel about their body. This will change the way that they age. It will change the way their family ages. It will change the way they show up in the world. There's a whole mindset component. I have the privilege of currently still seeing patients. And with patient experience comes a perspective over time of what really helps people.
I love
and that's
that.
Why I wrote the book.
So the book Forever Strong comes out on October 17th. I'm sure you can get it wherever books are sold. We will link to Dr. Lyon, all of her stuff in the show notes, including the book. I highly recommend following her on Instagram. It's at Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. And we'll also link to YouTube and Twitter and all the things that you're doing.
And I will say that if people go to my website, we have a ton of freebies.
Yeah.
Ton of free things that they can get if they pre-order the book. So I don't know when this episode is coming out, but we have a whole fitness library. We're doing a live event in January. There's so much that we want to offer and build because ultimately I can't spread this message by myself. This is a message about health and strength and just together we're better.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. So thank you so much for being here. Thanks for, you answered so many questions. I love it when we can get through so many. So I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So for more from Dr. Lyon, it's drgabriellelyon.com. For more from me, coconutsandkettlebells.com. Thanks for being here, guys. I will talk to you next week.